It's good to see you all. I just want to remind you of something. One of the things that has always impressed me about the church is that the church is actually supposed to be just a little bit of heaven on earth. That's what we are. We're not perfect here. Is that okay? We're not perfect here, and there will always be difficulties because there's a human side to the church on this earth. But God intended for us to have a place to go, to have some quietness, and to be with people of like precious faith. This is not the work that we do. This is where we go to get our batteries charged. Our work is out in the world. And work that's in the world can be very difficult at times. This is one of those topics. It's just been a struggle for a lot of people. And I know that it may not seem easy, and it isn't. One of the things about being a disciple of Christ is that you need to remember that the root word means discipline. We have to discipline ourselves, and we have to learn it. If you don't want to learn about the Bible, you really need to be thinking about the fact that maybe you're not pleasing to God. Each one of us has got to be working every day to become better. You know, kids that are young need to want to be leaders and deacons, and those who are older, they need to be striving to learn to become an elder. And then congregations will have their full complement of leadership. It doesn't always work out that way. But, you know, we just need to have that enthusiasm to try to do better than we've done in the past and continue to work forward. So I just encourage all of you to look at what you can do within the congregation, but more importantly, what you can actually do to help people outside this congregation. You know, the light shines out there. This is the salt shaker. You're the salt. Salt goes out there. You don't stay in the shaker. So I really appreciate the opportunity. I was very appreciative that there were so many people last night. I hope that that lesson was okay. Honestly, I don't remember much about it because I was so tired. But I got here, like I promised, and I got through. I think you'll understand a little bit better today. But I'm pretty sure I made all my major points. Not here. It's just a black screen. There's that in my thing. Oh, I heard it all. I told you I was going to make you do something. All right. So here's some points I made last night, and I understand about this microphone. I'm not bothered about it at all. But when I step over here, it would have been hard for you to hear me, and I apologize for that. It never crossed my mind. We're trying to help students to understand the difference between these concepts of evolution. There's really three. The two main ones are special and general, all right? But there's also the chemical evolution. You've got to remember that the concept that life came from non-life is a theory in and of itself that has never been proven. There's not a single scientist who can tell you where life came from. There's not a single scientist who can tell you what life is or what happens when it leaves our body. I mean, I looked at Mom. I touched her hand again. It wasn't Mom. It was her body. But the life had left her. No doctor, no professor can tell you what that is. It just goes. If I dropped over right now, all of the same little pieces would be in my body, and I would be dead, and you would not know what left. So the concept of where life comes from is a huge, huge concept that nobody in science has ever been able to help us with. So we talked last night about chemical evolution as well. But general and special are very simple things. Natural selection is true, and general evolution is a theory that has not been established yet. And you can explain the evidence just as well from the Bible as you can from a naturalistic view of this world. And I just want you to understand that never, ever has science found something that showed something in the Bible to be wrong. The things that are in the Bible are true. And many of them can't be tested. You know, it says I should love my enemies because I may be able to convert them. I mean, why would I hate my enemies? If I love them, I need to think, they've got a soul. I want them to repent before they die. Why would I hate them? Doesn't mean I have to like them. But I have to love their soul enough to think about them. And it's so easy in our society. It's like it was said in the sermon yesterday. You know, social media has made us some of the most unsociable people in the world. We've gotten so angry and bitter and back and forth and nip and tuck on the web. It's just the silliest thing in the world. It's just made us worse. You know, I think the disturbing thing to me is that I forgot my password. Yes, I have a password. Too many. And I forgot it for Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook for a year and a half, but my site keeps working. I have an entire community of people who've been communicating with one another and with me, and I've never been there. So, anyway, there's a difference between evidence and how it is interpreted. I will continue to emphasize that point today. And you need to understand that whatever the theory of origin that people choose, because it is a choice, it is a faith thing, whether they think of everything being natural or whether they allow the supernatural in, it will be accepted or rejected on faith. So let me make one comment on the supernatural. Think about the word. What does the word supernatural mean?
Above that which is natural.
Above or outside that which is natural. In other words, it's above nature. All right? So when people talk about supernatural and they use that word, they're attesting to the fact that most people in the world, including general evolutionists, believe there's something bigger than this world, something greater than the natural world. I have no problem with putting a name on that. That's Jehovah God, the one who created. I just have no problem with it. I'm not embarrassed about it, and I've never found anything in science or in any of my textbooks or classes that has ever taken that away from me, that has ever made me question one thing about what the Bible says about how humans relate and how they should relate and how that sometimes they don't relate the right way, how they choose evil instead of good. There's nothing there that is odd about that. You look at this room, pick one thing in this room to look at. Look around the room, pick one thing in this room to look at. Now, the thing that you're looking at, don't look at the people, but the thing that you're looking at on these walls and ceilings and so on, did it happen naturally or was it designed and created? It was designed and created. You have no problem with that. What is wrong with looking at life and saying, I believe that something outside of the system brought this system into existence for a purpose, and it was designed and created by a being beyond us. That's a very logical thought, and there's nothing in science that has set that aside. You can accept on faith that everything can be explained naturally, but you won't be able to prove it scientifically because you can't do experiments on most of the things that you're wanting to do. So I'll keep hammering on this as I go through here. Last night I started talking about these evidences for creation. My professor came in and showed me the evidences for evolution. And I told you I couldn't answer the question at that time. I just said, I can't answer your question at that time. It saves a lot of embarrassment on your part. You just say, that's a good question. Give them credit for a good question. And then just say, can I have some time? I'll get back with you. So when I came back into the classroom, and I was actually at University of Louisville when I was doing my master's, I was... Would it be better if we could turn some of these little lights off that are shining down? Will this go?
Yep.
What about those lights up there? Will they go? You think that's it? It's not blind now, it's blinding me. Okay, well maybe that'll make it a little bit better. Just flip them off. If they can't see with God's sunlight, there's a problem with this congregation. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. So when I came back a few days later, I said I was actually required to give a public presentation on this in my advanced evolutionary theory class to all of the faculty of biology and psychology and all the graduate students, something which is tacitly illegal. I had other requirements given to me because I believed. That's illegal. And I've chosen never to deal with it in a legal sense. I've chosen to return good for evil. Do you understand what I'm saying? And it's not always easy to do. And I believe it was the best route. You overcome evil with good. Anyway, I came back, I said, it's my evidence too. That was the click in my mind. That doesn't belong to the evolutionist, it belongs to me. Now last night I gave you an example of comparative anatomy and morphology. Today I want to follow that with fossil men. And the reason that I'm doing this is because in some ways it's just the same argument from comparative anatomy. You put an ape up here, put a suit on him, there's going to be a lot of similarities between him and me. We're both hairy, we both have eyes, we both have a nose, okay? We both sort of stand the same way. Actually, they cannot stand upright. Don't ever let somebody tell you they can stand upright, only for an instant. They have to be on all fours. They are animals, okay? But anyway, and I'm going to do that here. But there's a second part to fossil men that has been a concern to people, the idea of the ape to man thing, right? So we're going to cover it that way. Well, this is genetics. This is not fossil men. We're not in fossil men.
You're scheduled for Darwin natural selection in this session.
Okay. That's tomorrow then. Or tomorrow sometime. I'm sorry. My apologies. Let me tell you why Darwin was right. I don't have the same titles on this as you actually wrote onto your thing. Okay. I'll just back up. The points I've made are still... Stop laughing at me, girl. It's not fair. I see you back there. Let me just make the point that what I've said up to this point is exactly right. I went to the wrong place, and my apologies for that. It's not normal for me to do that, so there's something there. On the genetics, the reason that I need to talk about Darwin is that the genetics show that natural selection is true. And if natural selection is true, then there's a part of the evolutionary theory that is true. I don't think it's a part of the theory. I just think it is a theory. It's one of the three theories of evolution. Okay? So we talked about this idea of origins and the supernatural, and we're finished with that. We understand that cannot be proven or even tested by science at this point. On the other hand, when it comes to genetics, we can. And I want you to think about genetics and what it means. You are a little piece of your mom and dad. You got DNA, half of it from mom, half from dad. All right, if you don't like yourself, get back with mom and dad. They can't change it for you, but they're the reason for it. So anyway, we are a little bit of our moms and dads. Half of our genetics comes from mom and half from dad. It's put together, and we're sort of like them, but we're not like them. We have little traits of each. And most of us have watched our children grow up. Sometimes the kids would look more like Darlene. Sometimes they'd look more like me. As they become adults, they usually favor one or the other, and sometimes they just look different. The combinations of genes make it look different. So we'll go to genetics. In the evidence, among animals that reproduce sexually, except for identical twins, no two are exactly alike. No two are exactly alike. None of your children are exactly alike. Unless they're identical twins, they are not exactly alike. All right, so there's always some change in their size, their proportions, the colorations, external, internal structure, physiology, and habits. That's just true. Okay? And if you change the genetic constitution by recombining, I mean moms and dads recombine their genetics to make their children, that's a recombination. That's just a fact. All right, then it is possible that you can get new combinations and you can have mutations sometimes. We have 4,000 genetic diseases. Did you know that? 4,000 genetic diseases, most of which are chromosomal or protein, well, it's really, they end up being protein or enzyme problems because the DNA doesn't have the right code. All right? And sometimes it's just a single gene that does that. But that's because of the proteins. Now, what does that mean in real life? The general evolutionist has basically said, because Goldschmidt was a great geneticist, that from if you start looking at the evolution of the organic world, and you'll have to tell me, as soon as you figure out whether this is general, special, or whatever, you raise your hand and tell me. The evolution of the organic world from the synthesis of the first complex molecules endowed with the faculty of reproducing after their own kind. What was that? What did he just talk about? Which theory? It's actually the chemical. And then into the general. So, and he states it as a fact, right? That's what your students always get in class, these statements like this, as if though that's been proven. Never been proven. Never been proven. The evolution of the organic world from the synthesis of the first complex molecules, this is chemical evolution, all right, endowed with the faculty of reproducing their kind, never been proven, to the most advanced type of life must have taken place roughly within the past 2 billion years on our planet. We'll talk about that later. And this is the thing that bothers students. All the facts of biology, geology, paleontology, biochemistry, and radiology, which is like radioactive stuff, not only agree with this statement, but actually prove it. And what I'm saying is it does not do that. It simply does not do it. It can be interpreted that way, but there's more than one interpretation. Do you understand my thing about interpretation? Very important. There's three theories of evolution, one of which is right, which means we're arguing a half-truth, and the evidence always stops in the textbook and they add their interpretation on top of it, and you will not be able to discover that for a while. You're going to have to work at it. You're actually going to have to look at your textbooks. Evolution of the animal and plant world is considered by all those entitled to judgment to be a fact for which no further proof is needed. So if I disagree, I'm obviously not entitled to judgment, am I? So they slam you right in the middle of that thing. And this is the kind of thing that gets us angry, because we feel like, well, that was an unfair statement. I mean, not only is it offensive to me because I believe, but it implies that I'm stupid. I don't really have a right to do it. But I think that that's part of what is intended by many of these people, and they don't even realize they're doing it. They just don't like what you believe, and they're in control, and therefore they use their control to put you down. So don't get angry about it. You know, it doesn't matter. Get angry, you just get smart. You just have to think it out. No hypotheses, alternative to the principle of evolution with its tree of life, that any competent biologist of today takes seriously. So obviously I'm not a competent biologist. Chris is not a competent biologist. All of my friends who are working in all these research companies across the country who are thought of as competent biologists are not competent biologists because we don't take it seriously. We don't look at it the same way. All right? The principle is so important for an understanding of the world that we live in and of ourselves that the public in general, including students taking biology in high school, should be made aware of it and of the fact that it is as firmly established as the roundness of the earth. Well, it seems to me that those are intimidation statements. I don't think that Hermann Muller, who was a Nobel Prize winner, meant them to sound intimidating, but to a student who comes into a classroom who reads that in a textbook or has somebody say the same thing to them, are they going to stand up and say, baloney, I disagree with you? No, they're not. They're going to sit there. Now, I've already figured out that about 20% of all biologists and scientists on the earth don't believe in evolution, but most of them keep their mouth shut. What would happen if 20% of the scientists would stand up and say, look, natural selection is absolutely true. I believe in genetics. I understand molecular genetics. That's not a problem. But I still do not see any way of proving that life evolved from simple to complex, or that it ever came from non-life. How would that be? Wouldn't that be wonderful? And some are doing that. Some are doing that now. But I tell you, it is a small group. It's just sad. That's all I can say. This is the Galapagos Islands, is where Darwin went, down off of Ecuador in South America, off the west coast of South America. He went to this group of little volcanic islands. They're just the little tips of volcanoes sticking up in the ocean. And they're called an archipelago because there's hundreds of them together where the peaks are just above the water kind of thing. And we call them the islands. And the Galapagos Islands are where Darwin was looking at these finches. His basic belief was this. He came back and he published that there was a common ancestor from which all of these different finches that eat different things and have different habits evolved. All right. It was the first time that anybody had ever given an example of something that seemed to go against the going concept at that time, which was a false religious belief that all things were created exactly like they are today at the creation. The Bible never said that, but we said it said that. And there were some really competent biologists who were very serious religious people who said it said that. And everybody was like, Darwin didn't debate with the Bible, he debated with the people who gave us a false concept of what the Bible said. Now I want to make a point on that, because I'll just get to that point in a second. Here's a good little example of what I call natural selection. There's a moth there, that moth. This is what the trees look like around Manchester, England. This is protective coloration. They blended in with the lichens and so on that grew on these trees around Manchester, England. After the Industrial Revolution, when we started using coal, it blackened all the trees and it killed off the lichens. Now this is a moth. The black moth and the peppered moth, they both live there in the same population. So within the population of moths, it was about 95% this and 5% black before the Industrial Revolution. What do you think that was all about? Why 95% peppered when the trees look like this?
They survived.
They blended in, they survived. They had selection on them, but they survived. The ones, these stuck out like a sore moth up here, sore thumb. They stuck out like a sore thumb up here, didn't they? So there was only about 5% of them, but they have always been in the population, and by the way, they still are. Neither one of them has disappeared. But I'm willing to grant what they're saying. All right. So after the Industrial Revolution, all the soot from the coal killed off the plants that were there and left these trees very black. Now these stood out like a sore moth. So what changed in the population? The curves just reversed. It went back to 5% of these peppered things and about 95% of the black. Now, we still do not have new species, but I'm willing to grant them that you might get a new species out of that. I can show you other examples of birds and so on that have what we call circumpolar distributions. They go all the way around the Arctic, and at one end of their population they are one thing, and at the other end they are another thing, and they cannot reproduce with one another anymore. That's two new species. But the question of whether you can go from just a little bit of change to all of the change that would be needed to create all of the different forms of life that are on this planet within 50 billion years is questionable. And they're wanting to have it happen in 2 billion years if there really was 2 billion years. So this is a concept of natural selection right here. So let's go to this. I pointed this out last night. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, kale, and kohlrabi. It's the only time you'll ever hear me ask for them. All came from the wild mustard. They are not actually species, but I'd be willing to grant that they might become new species. But we've done that through artificial selection. So if you can artificially select, if you can find a way to naturally select, it would be possible to have these changes naturally, right? If you can find a natural way for nature to select on populations. Well, it does it all the time. Right now, in the hospitals, we're worried about all of these things for which we don't have antibiotics. Jim Henson, who was the one who produced the Muppets, died of a bacterial infection for which we had no antibiotic. Did you know that we have bacterial infections in the United States for which we have no antibiotics? We do. About 80,000 people die every year because they have infections and we can't find an antibiotic for it. Right now we keep having to create new antibiotics to fool the bacteria. And this is just the bacteria. We're not talking about viruses. You have no control over them. So when my son had spinal meningitis, they could not tell whether he had the bacterial form or the viral form, so they had to give him the last resort antibiotics of vancomycin and rocephin, and you can't get those. They have to be administered in the hospital through an IV and a PICC line that has to go all the way to the aorta of your heart so that it doesn't burn out the inside of your vessels. And it was a tough time for our family. All right, but vancomycin and rocephin are not the last gap ones now. The last stop is something else. I don't even know what they are now. But there's some new ones that we've had to develop. And now they give vancomycin and rocephin in different ways in the hospital for different things. But the ones that were sort of a last resort antibiotic have to be changed constantly. And you or I or somebody that we know may not be able to beat those bacteria because they are constantly evolving through natural selection. All right? Then you need to understand that individuals cannot evolve. You can only change a population of individuals. It's a very different concept. And I'll show you that in just a second. So all of these came from that. You may not realize it. All the cattle that we have today are not like the original cattle. All the horses we have today have come from the original plains horse, which probably looked like kind of a tawny-colored donkey. We've done that through artificial selection. And I believe that Darwin found a way to show that natural selection could occur. All right? And then everybody thought that what the Bible said was wrong because of this one professor. This one professor who said that no species can ever change or mutate because God is all-powerful. Now, what's the problem with that? He simply overstated what the Bible says. You go back to the story of in Genesis of Jacob and Laban, and you're going to find the concept of natural selection and artificial selection. Because every time Jacob had his wages changed, his flocks changed, and he began getting the wrong number. And he knew they were the wrong number because he already knew about that concept. He knew he shouldn't be getting that many spotted and striped and speckled or whatever it was, you know, that it should be a different proportion of the flock. He knew about the proportions. He knew enough about it to recognize it as a miracle. Think about that a second. He was just as smart as we are. He already understood the concept of artificial selection, selecting for certain characters, and he knew that God was helping him because every time Laban changed his wages, it went his way. It went against what he knew should naturally happen, and he saw the miracle of God in it. So he understood natural selection way back then. The Bible has been way ahead of science for a long time. The trouble is, when somebody teaches an error, sometimes it can catch on and mislead whole generations of people who think they are Christians because of that mistake. Darwin was not, showing that the Bible was wrong. He was showing that the people who had interpreted the Bible at that time were wrong. And it's a very important point. So Darwin was right. On natural selection, Darwin was right. That part of evolution is right. Are you willing to accept that? Are you worried about these bacteria? Because you know it's happening. Are you worried about the sprays, our pesticides, and our insecticides, and whether they are actually creating stronger populations because we can't spray enough. You ought to be. It's an important thing for you. All right, that's natural selection. Happens within populations. So I can grant the same thing here. I have no problem with going from the Dawn horse to the horse that we have today, because I watch people breed horses in artificial selection and change them dramatically. I can't get over the difference between a Belgian and these little tiny dwarf things. Now here's one of the things that you need to understand. In artificial selection, none of these ever can live in nature. Put those little dwarf things out there, they aren't going to stay that way. They're either going to die out or they're going to go back to the natural. Breeders will tell you that. If you take a racehorse and put it out in the wild, it won't remain a racehorse. It'll go back to the natural form or it will die. Artificial selection has been well known by breeders for years and years. But I'm willing to grant that you might get some new things that we call species out of changes like that in the environment that affect a particular population of things. All right, so we're going to go through that. Artificial selection has done it with cattle, with dogs. This is a great example. Russian geneticists knew about this one. This is an extinct muck ox. It was extinct for like 600 years, 300 years, 300 years, excuse me. And they started taking modern breeds of cattle and they bred backwards until they got to that. That was kind of reverse natural selection, wasn't it? Or reverse artificial selection? Right, so it's possible for that to happen. I think they got pretty close to it myself. What do you think the title was on the article in the newspaper? Scientist reverse evolution. Did it have special or general or chemical on it? No one's going to do that for you. If you don't start putting general, special, or chemical on the front of the word evolution, nothing will ever change. We are the only ones who can change the world on that. Some of us as scientists have already started doing it. That's one thing I talk to my honor students about, my undergraduates. Every class that I teach, I talk about this concept of general, special, and chemical evolution. And I say, be really careful about being dogmatic until you understand that distinction. You and I are the only ones who will use those terms. You will never find a general evolutionist who will use those terms. They won't even refer to themselves as general evolutionists. Now remember, those are not creationist concepts. I took that out of my textbook in Advanced Evolutionary Theory, where he talked about special and general evolution. I took it from G.A. Kirkup, from his great article in 1960, and he was the editor of an advanced series of monographs on pure and applied biology. These are not creationist things I'm talking about. These came right out of my classes. Are you clear on that? I am not using creationist literature to talk to you. I'm talking about my classes and my textbooks. So, where are we going with this? Well, we're going to the fact that I have no problem with this. This is natural selection. I have no problem with it. Now, what's the advantage of understanding that? Because evolution is talked about, but the only examples that are ever given are special evolution. They are the only actual examples that are ever given in the textbooks. Because nobody watched general evolution happen, and nobody has ever seen life come from non-life. And if you did the experiment, what would you have done? Let's say you took enough things and you put them together and you made life from non-life. That would have been done by intelligence, right? So the only thing you would have proven is that somebody who is intelligent could take the things that are and take them from non-life to life. And the Bible says that intelligence created matter into life. So what have you proven? You've proven the Bible. That's about all you've proven. So I just want you to understand this. Now, it's not Darwin versus... Well, the reason I had that up there originally is that it is really... There's a lot of name-calling and slurring and slamming people for what they believe rather than rational discussion. And I'll tell you why. Because we're too busy to talk to people. The same thing's true with the gospel. It takes time to talk to people about the gospel and what it can do in changing their life. We would rather just say, here's the things we believe. They're tacked up on the front of the door if you believe it. Come on in. And that's how we're going to make our congregation grow. We're not going to reason with people. We're not going to give them a reason of the faith that we have with meekness and fear. That takes too much time. And I need to go to that race. And I need to go to that game. And I need to go to that concert. And I need to go to that party. And I need to do this. Being a Christian is being busy being a Christian. When we signed into the Lord's army, we basically said, I'm going to make some really hard decisions here. Some things that I would really, really like to do, I'm going to set aside to do the Lord's work. And we may not like to think about it that way. I mean, we've run into this problem in every congregation we've been in where perhaps there were no elders. I don't think you have elders now, but you've had elders, so you know what it's like. And you talk to people about becoming an elder, and they say, I'm not qualified. Then get qualified. Work at it. Study. Become a teacher. Talk to people. Pray. Go to the hospitals. Help them out. Become the kind of person who's a leader in the congregation. Then you can be an elder, and then you can help the congregation. It's easy for us as Christians at every level of our life to become so enamored by the things that we have in this life as to not do the things that we need to do, not to have the discipline to be able to become teachers of the truth. We talk a lot about how we show it in our lives. Do you? What was it the old preachers used to say? If they were going to convict you for being a Christian, would they find enough evidence to prove that you were? Would you have had anything in your life to prove that you were a Christian, or would you just look like everybody else? I just want you to think about some of those things, because it takes time and effort to learn some of this. This is not for everybody at this level. But I want you to understand there's nothing in science that has set aside anything in the Bible. It has set aside some false statements about the Bible, but has never set anything aside in the Bible. God's Word still stands as the most unique book on the face of the earth, and we'll talk about that at a different time. It's this making fun of one another. Ridiculous. If you make fun of an evolutionist, do you think you're actually going to ever have an opportunity to help them with their soul? If they make fun of you, are you ever going to ask them to come on over and have cake and tea? No. We live in our little castles, we build our little castles, and we hide with the people that we like, and we don't get into the world. I remember one of my very good friends who is an extremely spiritual woman. And she said, you know, one day at church, they asked each of us to bring five people that we knew to the church building. And she said, you know, I realized that the only people I know are church people. I don't know anybody in the world other than church people. She had no idea who to ask, because the only people she spent any time with were church people. You cannot live in Salt Shaker. You and I have to get out into the world and be with people who probably will be offensive to us at many levels, to talk to them and to just be good to them, learn about them, befriend them, talk to them about their spiritual needs and try to draw them to Christ. And most of the time we're going to fail. Go back and read Isaiah. Isaiah was told by God when he started his prophecy that not one person would believe him or listen to him, and he still had to do it. Because later on, God came back and he said, from the scriptures, this was Isaiah, he preached to your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all of this time, and this is what he said, and they would understand that God had helped them and they had not listened. Being a Christian is an effort. It's a job. What you do outside of this, outside of working for God, is your secondary job. You know, so that's why I don't like people to tell anybody that I teach at school. That's not my main job. My main job is being a Christian. Even being a minister, that's not my main job. My main job's out there being a Christian. I talk to people constantly. People that many of you would not even approach. And it was not easy to learn to do that. It was hard to learn to do that. It was hard to learn to go to the hospital. I hear Christians all the time say, "Oh, I don't like to go to the hospital. It's so depressing." Well, get over it. You're going to be there someday. You want somebody to come visit you? I'm telling you, we've got to live this out in our own lives, guys. This is making fun of somebody. So I took it off. It's not Darwin versus the Bible. It's this misconception they have about creationism. They don't understand that we believe natural selection. The issue is not what that. We do not believe that these things have been the same down through. We know that they could have changed within certain limits. And there's the issue. It's not change. It is change with no limits. I'm going to pause. You're going to love that one. Sorry. Hey, there's no button. You're not the one up here doing this. Oh, that's going to be terrible. Sorry, guys. I had to call. Now we're not right. It's this building. I'm blaming it on the congregation here. So the point is, there can be change, but it is change within limits. And that's what we've always seen. We've seen change, but change within limits. So does general evolution occur? I've never seen it happen. I've seen natural selection sort of occurring. I've never seen too many new species. But I'll give you some examples of it in just a second. This is the guy that caused the problem. This is the father of modern taxonomy. You know how you have Latin names for trees like Quercus alba and stuff like that? This is the guy right here. The one with the wig. That's the guy. Carolus Linnaeus, but he changed his name to Carol Linnaeus. It was Carol Linnaeus and he changed it to Carolus Linnaeus because he put it into a Latin binomial. That's what he did. But he taught that species were immutable. The Bible does not teach that species are immutable. He taught that species were immutable. That is the problem with false doctrine. It can lead whole generations, whole nations, aside from the truth of the Word of God. All right? Now I'll show you this, and I'll come back to it later. The biblical kind is not the species. The hawk after its kind. Many species of hawk. Many species of hawk. Okay? Cattle. Many species of cattle. We have different genuses of cattle. All right? The only place where the kind seems to be the species is with humans, where God created man after his own kind. But he believed that because God was all-powerful, he would not allow anything that he created to have to change because it would be perfect. Do you see his logic? Was his logic good logic? Plenty good logic. If God's all-powerful, he would create everything and nothing would ever change. God created a food web. We talked about that last night. Now, Genesis 1:27 says that mankind is a species. Cattle are at the genus level. Hawks are at the order level with families under them. Genera of hawks and species of hawks. So our classification system doesn't fit. And yet all of those are called kind in the Bible. So you cannot make the kind the species. It just turns out that mankind appears to be a species, but none of the other organisms on the face of the earth are that way. Now, why would God do that? God's always given people enough rope to hang themselves, to be honest with you. He'll give them over to to a strong delusion to believe a lie. I don't believe that Linnaeus thought he was lying. He just made a mistake. But everybody believed him. Every Christian at that time believed that species were immutable. What did Darwin do? He showed that they weren't. You could change species. So everybody thought he had disproven the Bible. Okay? So the Old Testament writers had a pretty sophisticated concept of artificial selection. Go back to Genesis chapters 30 and 31 and study that on your own. Jacob and Laban and what I talked about. That was artificial selection, and he knew what it was, and he knew he wasn't getting what he should have been getting, so he recognized it as a miracle. Did you understand that concept? Okay. Same book that introduces us to the concept of God's abrupt creation and the destruction of the world by a flood is the one that talks about artificial selection in chapters 30 and 31. Did you know that? Artificial selection's been around since the beginning of time, and these people in the Old Testament, same book where we talk about the flood and the creation, has artificial selection in it. Did you know that? He knew he had a miracle going on because he knew what he should have been getting. He wasn't getting what he should have been getting. God had to have been helping him. Didn't he change his wages 10 times? Seems like Laban changed his wages 10 times. 10 times he had it proven to him that God was doing a miracle because it didn't work out the way it should have according to artificial selection. In the Bible, in Genesis, same book that talks about the abrupt creation and the Genesis flood. You don't need to be embarrassed about it. Okay? Here's the difference. I believe in a supernatural creation and some change within limits. So you have bird kind and horse kind and cow kind and ape kind, and you have mankind. We have different variations of mankind, but we don't have different species. We are the only species. Because what God did with us is he gave us a soul. We are unique. We are not an offshoot of animal kind. We're not some kind of anomaly of animal kind. We are unique. This is what the general evolutionist says. There was a natural creation, and the general theory started with single-celled organisms that became multicellular, that became different kinds of species that have evolved down through time. Has this been proven? No, it has not. Never watched it happen. Can't show that it happened. All right, now, individual organisms can evolve. That's one of the biggest misconceptions that people have. I cannot evolve. I am what I am what I am. If I have to compete for food this afternoon by running from here to the park, I will not get food this afternoon. But there will be some of the kids on the first row and two or three of these over here who are going to make it. Oh, and Chris. The man walks every place. You went down to the barn? You ride your four-wheeler? No, I walk a lot. That was at 1 o'clock in the morning, I think. Individual organisms cannot evolve. I cannot change. Can't make. The Bible says that I cannot add one cubit to my stature, right? I can't change my body at all. Kids, you might as well learn this now. You are what you are what you are, and you can't change it. Live with it and learn to love it. People don't look at one characteristic of your body. They just look at you. If you are a happy person, it won't matter what you look like. They will want to be around you. And if you are a child of God and you're happy, they will want to be around you. They always will want to be around you. Every time I go in my classes, I find every single solitary college student will raise their hand and say there's something about their body they'd like to change. Well, duh. So would I. All right. It didn't happen before, and I'm 68 years out. I stopped trying. It is not going to happen. I will not be taller. Stop laughing. There are some of us who are more closely related to the hobbits, and that would be me. I'm sorry. All right, so individual organisms cannot actually evolve. This doesn't happen. I'm going to hold my breath and run across. It just does not happen. Only populations can change. Okay? You don't find a cheetah who gets a new thing of Adidas. You know? and can run faster and catch those animals. It just doesn't happen that way. It has to do with whole populations. So when they're talking about natural selection, they're talking about populations of bacteria changing, becoming more resistant, not individuals. Okay? The ones that can't take that particular medicine, they're dead. That leaves the ones that are most resistant, but it is a population change, right? Okay. So individuals can't evolve. Only populations can change over time. All right? Now, this is Darwin's concept of natural selection. All of that was said to get to this. Organisms tend to multiply at a geometric rate. If you look at the curve, 2 become 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, right? We evolve like this, all right? Populations grow at that rate. What's interesting, and you can ask any naturalist who studies this, is that the number of individuals in a population will remain pretty constant. I suspect that the white-tailed deer population here may be going up because it's one of the species that's going up. And is the elk population going up now? That's good because it's new and it's been reestablished. But, you know, probably the coyote population is pretty stable. The rabbit population is pretty stable. The red-tailed hawk population is pretty stable around here. Okay? So, what we're going to find is that if they can do this, but what they actually do is they go like this, the difference between those curves means there's some kind of competition and struggle for survival. That's all he said. Competition exists. There's some kind of struggle for survival. And the variations that are there between you and your parents, or you and me, is what's going to give some people the possibility of surviving past me. Like getting to dinner past me. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be talking about dinner when I'm going late here. It's 12 o'clock. Did you know that? I'm sorry. So I want to show this. This is how populations take off, all right? This is what they actually do. We have technical words for this to confuse people. It's called the carrying capacity, or K. But it levels off. And the difference between the two is the struggle or the competition you can measure. Okay? So the only thing that Darwin did was to add one thing to this. He said, well, you know, with all of my work with these pigeons and all this artificial selection, I found out that the variations that exist among the members, some of them will be favorable, and some of them will survive to produce offspring, and others won't. And don't you believe that? So I give you a great example of this. I can't go to black screen, can I? I'll just leave it there. When I was down in Chipley, Florida, how many people know where Chipley, Florida is? A little southwest of Two Egg, Alabama? No help. You can look it up. It's in the western panhandle. You come up through Florida, and you may not realize it, but Florida is just about as wide at the top as it is long. It is a very long state. You get over to Mobile, Alabama, and as you're on I-10 going across there, you're going to run into Chipley, Florida. It was one of my good friends, Brother Cutts, became the beekeeper, the head beekeeper of all of Florida's beekeeping industry, the honeymaking industry. That's a big deal from a scientific point of view. When I was doing a meeting at Chipley, there was this guy in the back. He says, David, tell me if this is an example of evolution or natural special evolution. He says, when I was a kid, I used to hunt these fields out here. And there was one set of fields that we sort of called quail paradise. You could walk out there and you could bag your limit almost immediately. And he says, you know, I'd been out of Chipley for a long time, and I came back, and we decided to go back out to quail paradise. When you get 25 years out from being here, you're going to want to come back. You don't think that you will, but you will come back, kids. All right, and you're going to want to go to some of those places that you enjoyed as a child. And he says, you know, we hunted all day long. We couldn't scare up any quail. Well, of course, I had to have quail hunting explained to me, but I understand that part now. They couldn't scare up quail. Okay. And this is what he said. But I noticed one thing. We heard them running in the brush. And he said, it made me remember back when I was a kid that every once in a while we'd hear them run off in the brush. Are there any quail hunters here who know, can verify that that's true? You've heard them run, but they also fly up. So there are runners and flyers in quail populations, right? What happened? One that flew up had a selection pressure. Well, that's how we would say it now in science. Had a selection pressure called buckshot. Took them out of the air, and they didn't live as long to pass those genes on for flying, and so the ones that ran off were the ones that were still there, and they became the population. Like these peppered moths, the white, the black, and the peppered. That's all. Do you believe that? You have any problem with it? That's special evolution. So Darwin's natural selection was actually based on special evolution, and we've given four examples already today, haven't we? Things you already know and you believe. So what's the problem here? The problem is you didn't realize that you believe one of the theories of evolution. And that's one of the most important things that I can send home with you out of this meeting. That when you use the word evolution, you say general, special, or chemical. And you begin to make those distinctions, and people will say, what are you talking about? Now, this goes back to my original question. Are you an evolutionist, or are you a creationist? Yes. If I say, I'm a creationist, you will never see that person again if they're an evolutionist, right? Because they live in a different silo. You live in this silo, they live in a different silo, and we don't want to meet because we don't like them. I've had evolutionists who have come to my meetings who would not shake my hand as a creationist. They were not going to touch my hand as if I was a disease. I wasn't offended by that. I understand it. We do the same thing to them, don't we? We need to be really careful about that. So, natural selection is true. General evolution has not been proven yet. And chemical evolution will never be proven. If it is, all we will have done is taken intelligence to do it, and all that does is support the concept of intelligence creating life. I already believe that. I have no problem with it. So I want you to understand, this is all that Darwin taught, and I believe it. Now here's the deal. Can it go on forever? We have lots of varieties of people in the world. We still have one species, one blood, mankind. Humankind is one kind, uniquely given a soul and a responsibility. There's not one dog or cat that you have as a pet that you love and they seem so human that cares about this argument. I don't see that you brought your gerbil. I don't see those floppy-tailed wabbits in here. Nobody seems to have a pet or a dog, a horse, or anything that they decided to bring to hear me because they don't care. They're not human. We are human. And there is a soul inside of every human that you see. If you can look past the outside, if you can look past the outside, if you can look past the outside, there are good people and bad people all over the world. If you can look past the outside and look for the soul, there is a global work that we have to do. But I know many Christians who wouldn't live next to almost any of those people. No offense, I'm just being honest with you. I had to overcome the same prejudice. People that were different, they were different. I didn't like to be around them. They were speaking a different language on campus. You know what they tell international students at EKU? When they say, if you are speaking your language around Americans, they'll get paranoid. They'll think you're talking about them. Isn't it sad you have to say that to an international student? Because when we go to Europe, we speak English and we're not necessarily downing anybody, are we? So I want you to think about that. Many, many varieties, but every one of these people has a soul. I don't know who they are. There are over 200 races that we have identified of humans. Can you love them all? When the angels came to see Abraham, when they appeared, when the men appeared at Sodom, when the men appeared at different places, were they Caucasian, European looking, or did they look like really dark Arabic people? Like Abraham was. They looked like you, the angels. Whoa! Okay, Chris.
Good old Rockcastle County.
Chris Craig with his halo. All right, guys. I'm sorry. All I'm saying is that populations can change. Those that can't reach the trees where they can only feed, they're going to die. They're going to just die out. There are other concepts. Okay, I'm going to end on this because it's funny. This is just another view of how giraffes got their long legs. I mean, their long necks. Well, they had long legs, and then as they came. Do you not see the humor in that at all? Okay, here's the deal. We spray for roaches, and if there's a gene that confers resistance to one of these roaches, it will survive, and then the whole next population will be it. Make sense to you? Natural selection. You good with that? Stop worrying about it. Learn to say general, special, chemical, evolution. And I get frustrated when people won't do that. I get really frustrated. And I get frustrated when people let the fact that somebody looks Hispanic or black or Indian or Arabic get in the way of looking through to see their soul, to address their soul. Jesus looked like a Jew. He looked like an Arabic person. He didn't look like us. You need to understand that. It's important. I have no problem with this. This is, to me, this one right here, okay, is just this. Darwin is not the one we're fighting, guys. You need to understand that. He is not the one that we're fighting. We've just got things that we're going to have to get past in our own lives. I thought that would go to black screen a little bit. Yeah, the bottom one's not doing anything. That's all right. I don't want to mess up that recording.
There you go.
You've done it now. Well, I'm done. Apparently, he shut me off by shutting my slides off. I am done, and we need to go eat. What I'm saying is, if you can, are you beginning to get this feel for this general, special kind of chemical thing? It's very important that you may not understand anything else about how I got there, but you've seen that we got there. The Bible does not teach against natural selection or artificial selection. It does teach that man is a unique, created individual, accountable to God, with a soul, and no matter how they're wrapped, we need to love. Was that a pretty good summary of what I just said? Thank you, guys.